I'll do the water.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the kind invitation to speak here today. And indeed, my expertise is on understanding complexity and uncertainty. It was already mentioned. I'm a professor at Groningen University on this topic and have founded a network called GlocalMNet, which indeed deals with social complexity and uncertainty. And in that network, we do many things. One of the things that we are doing is to help agents, governments, firms, individuals to act effectively under uncertainty and in a complex environment. So what I would like to do today is first talk a little bit about what I mean by complexity and uncertainty, because I think that's important. Then I will refer to a model that we have developed for helping you to act effectively under uncertainty. And then I will, and that's the main part of my presentation, I will list 10 items that will follow from taking into account complexity and uncertainty if you have to run a complex process or a complex project. So what is complexity? First of all, perhaps the most important thing is to tell you what it is not in this context. In ordinary language, complex and complicated are often seen as identical. And that's not the case here. What I'm referring to is not something that is complicated, but I am referring to complexity. So what is complexity and what is complex? There are many definitions around, but I usually use a rather simple one, which says that you have to do with a complex system if you have many interacting agents which also respond to their environment. And an important characteristic of such a system, if it's a human system, and we're talking about human systems, is that it is impossible to collect all the information, all relevant information, for understanding that system and for describing the status of that system at a certain point in time. It's impossible to collect all the information that you would need to do that at one central point. So a complex project or a complex process is when you have a process or a project that's dealing with a complex system. And in such a project, you will have, and I will just mention it, and perhaps you can come back to that later on, you have to do, I already mentioned it, with many interacting persons, but also usually with many interacting variables. And there's multi-causality. There's usually non-linearity, which says that the whole is more than the sum of its parts. So you cannot simply understand what's happening at a system level by adding up what's happening at a lower level. That doesn't work in complex systems. You do not get it right if you do that. Final thing that I'd like to mention is that in complex systems, you often have what are called sudden transitions, or in other words, tipping points, where all of a sudden, for instance, after a period of calm, you enter into turbulence. And just to mention one example from my own expertise, I'm not an energy expert, I should emphasize, but from my own expertise in the financial sector, if you look at the period before the financial crisis in 2007, 2008, we had a long period of very high stability. And then all of a sudden that broke down. And that's something that you see very often in complex systems, not only in the financial system, but you see it in nature. You see it also in social processes. Now, your project, your topic, summarized as achieving sustainable energy, is obviously complex. I think there's no way to deny that, I would say. So achieving sustainable energy is a complex process. So that on the complexity part. Now, briefly, on uncertainty. here I think it is crucial that we make a distinction between fundamental uncertainty on the one hand and risk on the other hand. And let me define them briefly and point out why this distinction is so crucial for thinking about projects. In a situation of risk, you do not know what the outcome, the exact outcome of a certain decision or a certain action will be, but you are able to come up with a complete exhaustive list of all the possible outcomes. Simplest example, if you flip a coin and it's a fair coin, you know that it will be heads or tails, but you do not know in advance which side it will be if it's a fair coin. That's an example of a situation in which we have to deal with risk. And the importance of that is that if you are in such a situation where you can list all the potential outcomes of your decision, you can apply a lot of available techniques and modeling strategies, because the probability calculus is applicable. So you can use that, you can use all kinds of modeling techniques based on the probability calculus and on statistics and statistical methods derived from that. What about a situation where you cannot list all the possible outcomes? That's what we call fundamental uncertainty. So you're unable to list all the possible outcomes. Now the point is that in almost all, certainly longer term, human decisions and projects, it's not risk that is determining the situation and is dominant, but it is fundamental uncertainty. And why is that the case? It's for a logical reason. It's inescapable. Because simply, because we human beings cannot know now what we will discover in the future. And our innovations in the future, our discoveries in the future, may impact the decisions that we take now. So the list of possible outcomes of decisions that we will take now will be determined partly by what we will discover in the future. So we are unable to list now all the possible outcomes of a certain decision. So the energy transition process, the process of achieving sustainable energy, is a process that you operate under uncertainty and not under risk. You cannot assume that you can know all the possible outcomes. Now, as I already hinted at, and I'll come to the core of the presentation, I, together with a couple of colleagues at Glocomnet, our network, have derived a certain model, graphical model, descriptive model, or how you can operate under complexity and uncertainty in the real world. And that's based on several strands of theory. I will not go into that at this time. Let me suffice it to mention that what is called modern complexity science, so insights from modern complexity science, are one important pillar in that framework. So what does looking at your project and the types of projects that are operated in an uncertain and complex environment, what does this model imply for such projects? And as I already announced, I will mention 10 points. And not to be exhaustive, that's also impossible in the time frame that we have, but to give you at least the flavor of what it means. So the first thing, and it's in arbitrary order, it's not that the first point is more important than the last one. It's an arbitrary order. So what it tells you is that calculate and plan wherever you can. So it does not say stop modeling or stop using quantification, stop using statistics. Use that wherever you can, but be aware of the strong limits to the use of those models, to predictability and controllability of complex processes and systems. That's the first point. The second one says that you, however much you would like it, you will never have all the information you would like to have to feel comfortable to make a decision based on all the information that's relevant. And that's for two reasons. The first is because in a complex system, all the relevant information is scattered around the system, and you will simply not be able to collect it at one point. And secondly, because of the uncertainty under which you have to take the decision, relevant information simply does not exist at the moment that you decide. The point is that your decision and the action that follows your decision will create information and will change the system. And you would love to have that information before you act, but that's logically impossible. So you cannot have all the information that you would like to have. There is not such a thing as complete information possible. It's logically impossible. It's part of the human condition under which we live. But, and that's I think it's an important thing, which I often found. You should not fall into the trap of what I would call action paralysis, so that you don't act before because you don't have the information that you would like to have. If you want to achieve something in a complex system and in a uncertain world, you have to act. You have to act, otherwise it will not happen. You will be paralyzed by the situation. Third point, there will always be potential surprises, positive and negative, along the road. There has been research on execution of business strategies, and I think the outcome of that research was that in more than 80% of those strategies, they were amended and adapted very strongly along the road. You will never have a straight line from A to B, as it were. Always positive and negative surprises, always potential. So you will be surprised at times, and you will always make mistakes. That's inevitable that you sometimes get it wrong. However well you plan, or however well you have calculated, sometimes you will make mistakes. So what does this require in your project? And I refer to four at a very high level things that are needed. And basically, dealing with complexity and uncertainty is dealing with the fact that you will be surprised and the fact that you will make mistakes, and that things are not fully controllable. If you want to summarize it, that's the best way to really say it in a nutshell. So what does it require? A couple of things. I mentioned four. And all this is still part of my third remark. It requires what we call alertness. An alertness defined as the capacity to detect mistakes and errors. So it refers to monitoring, if I may put another word on it, alertness. Secondly, it requires what I would call adaptive capacity. So that is the capacity not only to detect surprises and mistakes, but also to respond to them and to adapt your course of action, to adapt your strategy, if I may use a more familiar word. Thirdly, it requires you to be resilient. Resilient defined as the capacity to survive negative surprises and to remain viable. So in terms of a project, indeed the capacity to maintain a viable project, so to maintain sight in the end on what you want to achieve after being surprised negatively. Fourthly, and finally, it requires what I would call creativity. And creativity defined here as the capacity to find new ways, to act in new ways, and it's a second dimension to it, to turn turbulence into opportunity. And this second element is sometimes called being anti-fragile. So benefit from turbulence rather than being killed by it, as it were. Fourth aspect in our model is use many perspectives and the experience of many people that are stakeholders in the wider process or in the wider project. And there I can use another label, what I would call participatory inquiry. So do not only look at it from one perspective and with a limited number of people and forget about all the experiences of all the other stakeholders that are part of the process and should be part of the process if you want to change something. Fifth point, use qualitative information alongside the more quantitative information that traditionally is very dominant, and use that qualitative information in the several phases of running a project. And basically, running a project in this model is a constant, continuous feedback process of four phases. So a constant, continuous feedback process having four phases. And the picture I see in front of me, if I talk about it, is a kind of a circle that moves in time. And the four phases are preparing, thinking, that's the first phase, then acting or doing, assessing or monitoring, and adapting. And then so you get a circle, preparing, acting, assessing, adapting, preparing, assessing, acting, assessing, and adapting. Continuous feedback process. Use in that process qualitative information, for instance, using narrative techniques. So using storytelling and using stories in this feedback process. Use network analysis, and not only the quantitative part of network analysis, but also the qualitative aspect of it. Six points is perhaps related to the previous one. I now realize while I'm speaking, that is, use qualitative and quantitative scenarios. I said earlier, you cannot predict the future, but we have the capacity to imagine it. And scenarios in this approach are imagined possible potential futures. So no predictions of the future in this case, but imaginations. And even without a concrete time horizon, rather imagining, let's say, potential future, what we call orders, structured outcomes in society. Seventh point, and logically, perhaps the first point, if you start to think about a process on achieving sustainable energy, is make sense together with as many stakeholders as possible of what you mean by sustainable energy. What is it and what you want to achieve? And then I do not refer to a precise target of X percent or X degrees Celsius temperature increase, which of course is a target, I know. But in running a complex process, in the initial phase, you start at a higher level, as it were. What is it what we want to achieve? What do we mean by, in this case, sustainable energy? And not just, let's say, a few people around the table, but set up a process in which you use the experience, use the knowledge of many, many stakeholders. Eighth point, no blueprints. So no very precise, detailed path from now until the end of the century, for example. But start out, and there's a process to get there, start out with what I call courses of action. So you know what you mean by sustainable energy. You know then in what kind of a direction you would like to move. And that direction we call the course of action. You start to act, you start to do it, and then you're open to adapt along the on the road on the basis of that feedback process that I mentioned earlier. So no blueprints, but adaptable courses of action. And of course, that also means, I refer again to that circle, that you have to be alert all the time, again, to surprises and mistakes, and be able and also actively adapting your course of actions. Like you do as a sailor, you start out, you want to get somewhere, and at some point, all of a sudden, the wind starts to blow more fiercely, and you have to adapt, and you have to do that all the time. And even if you're driving a car, if you think how you drive a car, it's not just that you say, okay, I'm from A to B, and I don't look around. It's we do not have the automatic car yet, so you have to look around all the time. Ninth point, element of alertness, but I think a specific point, try to set up early warning systems for surprises. And again, here you have both quantitative techniques for doing that, based on non-linear dynamic processes, where you can try to detect these sudden transitions that I mentioned earlier, tipping points. There are techniques, mathematical techniques, supported by empirical work for trying to do that. That's not perfect, I should say, but there is some scope for doing that. But also use, again here, there's also scope for using the experience and the information by many stakeholders around the world, I would say, in the context of your process. Again, using techniques like storytelling. Storytelling techniques and these narrative techniques allow you to pick up what are called weak signals. Statistical techniques most of the time look at aggregate numbers, aggregate distributions of outcomes, it takes time to collect it, and there's relatively little information on what's happening, let's say, in the tails of the distribution. So there are statistical techniques are most of the time relatively late in indicating that something what is considered to be unlikely is still starting to happen. And collecting information from many people acting in the complex system, in the process, allows you to pick up those weak signals earlier, and to spot mistakes that you have made. And the only way in which you can learn is by responding to mistakes. So mistakes are an opportunity. Of course, you try to avoid them, and you should try to avoid them. But if they happen, there are two things. First of all, you would like to know as soon as possible. So that's the early warning. And then you should respond to that, and you should be able to learn from it, because that's what you can do then. Final and tenth point. Complex processes, and I think that is, I more or less made a point already, but I make it explicitly and perhaps repeat it to emphasize it a little bit. Complex processes cannot be managed completely top-down on the basis of instructions from the top to the bottom. There should be room for discretion, for action, for many agents in the process, for many stakeholders. So they should have room for their own decisions and actions. But it is important, and what in the end helps you to create a process which helps you to achieve what you want to achieve, is that you have, I think, in the earlier presentation, the earlier session before were mentioned, incentives. You have to have the right incentives in place, or, as I would call it, to have the right rules, in a broad sense, principles for action of the many stakeholders. And let me mention a number of such principles, not to say that should be principles that you apply in any project, and that you should apply all those principles, because you could easily see, if I go through the list, that some of them, there may be trade-offs, but that's something that you have to discover in your own project. So let me mention a couple of them, and at some point I probably have to stop to avoid to become boring and to overrun my time. So let me just mention a couple of them. The first one is modesty, in the sense that you should not set too detailed targets. Another one, look ahead, but not too far, not too detailed. Thirdly, do not underestimate the corrective forces of all the stakeholders. Do no harm. Do not interfere too quickly, too easily, too deeply. Give the corrective mechanisms of the system itself a chance. It's a very important principle, for instance, in medicine. Do not start to operate a person at the first sign of illness. Prevent rather than cure is an important one. Use your imagination, but don't let yourself to be carried away by things that are evidently impossible. Be prudent, mind the gap. That's a way of putting the precautionary principle. Think before you act, but don't forget to act. I think I already mentioned it. Learn by doing. And a very important one in the adaptive thing is that it is important that you experiment. You cannot know everything, but do it in a fail-safe, so-called fail-safe way. And the way to do that is that you start small and scale up what works and scale down what doesn't work. So you learn in evolutionary evolving process. Throw away what doesn't work. Don't be afraid to stop something but doesn't work. But scale up what works. And so you find what works. In other words, you be aware that there is not a known pathway to sustainable energy. You have to discover it. You have to explore it. You have to find it. Be patient to see effects. Don't overreact. If you overreact, we have what I would call the cold hotel room problem. That's the problem. You enter your hotel room and it's cold in that room. So you switch the temperature higher. Half an hour later, it's still cold. So you continue to switch on. You do that a couple of times. And at night, you wake up and it's far too hot. So you have underestimated the time lag between action and effect. So don't overreact. Let me see. A very important one is that the more people are curious and keen to understand and learn more, the better it is. Another word for the action point, because I cannot overemphasize the importance of action. Just do it. You recall Nike. I think Nike is right in this sense. Just do it. Act. Be bold. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. And perhaps the final one, because then I think it's time for the conversation. Continuously look for flaws in your own processes, in your own organization, in your own project, and how to remedy them before they turn into failures. I must say I have some experience in this regard with the air traffic control in Southampton, and I'm very happy that they follow this approach. They're constantly challenging their own process, looking for flaws, and there are incentives to detect flaws and remedy them. You are awarded for detecting flaws and reporting potential failure, because that's one of the great difficulties, and let me conclude on that note, is that in many organizations, and it's certainly true in the political process, the incentive to reporting that you were wrong, that you made a mistake, is politically very difficult. And there's a lot of work going on by many civil servants around the world, and I've done that myself, so I do not blame anybody in person. If I blame somebody, it's just me, myself. Working, writing memos to confirm that the policy that was started was right, even if there are strong indications that there were failures. And that, in the end, can be detrimental, and crucially detrimental, to any project, to any policy going forward. So these were my 10 points. Thank you very much so far for your attention.